Okay, we will start tonight with the declaration and the announcements.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ULT in Philadelphia. As you know, you can always pick up one of these little yellow pamphlets in the library or at the usher's table. That's self-explanatory in many ways, because the purpose is to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And for that purpose, inside of this pamphlet, you will find a schedule or schedule. We have two meetings a week. Tonight, as you see, Wednesday night, the meeting began promptly at 7:30, although the door is open at 5:15, so you can come in and prepare for that particular night or either peruse some of the wonderful volumes that you'll find in that library. Ask questions of the librarian, he'll be glad to help you. Tonight, as you probably know, we'll be studying In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. Sunday, we will have the doors open for you at 10:30. And we begin promptly at 11, and it's over at noon. And this Sunday will be May the 22nd, and the topic is dreams and the dreamer. Now, we would like, before we read this declaration that's so important, remind everyone to pick up one of these, because we're going to have a symposium this Saturday. And on this sheet, it tells you Saturday, May 21st from 1 to 3:30 p.m. If you've never attended one of them, please, if you possibly can, attend. You'll be surprised. any other information you want, phone numbers right on this sheet. Try to show you how we perform here, and that it's all voluntary contributions of time by those who participate, and also the lodge depends entirely on volunteer offerings of finance and so forth. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associations being that, its associates rather, being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in a and desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
So this Saturday, the forum is rather short, but the topics are amazingly deep. Life is a school, the reality behind illusion, the way of faith and devotion. Take a look at the flyer. It will hopefully get you interested in participating. No fee, no nothing, just the doors will be open 1 o'clock to 3:30. For next week, we need volunteers. We need someone who might like to do the fundamentals. Anyone? And we also need someone who would like to do the summary of that part of the chapter. Thank you very much. Speaking of which, we will now have a summary of pages 138 through 141 in The Ocean. It's a portion of chapter 16. And it starts and ends sort of where the page breaks in the 138. Starts using the same powers, and 141 ends where the paragraph ends before the new topic. Thank you.
Well, it does start. The part does start by saying using the same powers. So we're just going to reiterate this time what those powers are. Those are attraction, repulsion, cohesion, dispersion, the inner chemical laws, and the dynamic laws of nature. They were mentioned part before. So using these, and if that can cause a material object before your eyes, what could just summarily be called evolution in your very presence. And it is stated that is because matter is held suspended in the air about us, and that every particle of matter has been through all possible forms. So, if one were to select from the astral light a form, then through their will and imagination, they could clothe that form with matter through precipitation, and that object would fade or remain permanent if there were other processes to make it remain permanent. And then the same explanation would hold for the explanation of visible letters that are in the history of the theosophical movement, of the imagination of the sender would have to have photographically and sharply defined image within the mind of every line and letter, and that the pigment would be drawn down from the atmosphere, and the lines laying down by that brain would create the letter on paper. So, it naturally leads to the proposition that the human will and imagination is quite strong, and that it is the most useful faculty of dynamic force, the will and imagination. The imagination is the picture-making power of the human mind, and trained, it is the constructor of the human workshop. that makes the matrix and effects will objectively flow to the matrix, thus made. So a Western definition of imagination is incomplete. And in an unregulated mode, it is covered by fancy. And it is just related to all things that stand for unreality or misconception, things made up the mind. The definition in the dictionaries, if you Google imagination and have a theosophical understanding of it, it's right there for you in black and white, perfect definition, if you had a theosophical definition to accompany the standard definition. In that unrelated mode, yes, it is fancy, but to a greater limit, causes in the imagination evolve astral substance. In the same way that you could use an iron molder, mold of sand, to make iron. Therefore, it is considered the king faculty, and yet the will cannot, and also the will cannot work without the imagination. So the imagination, if it can be weak or trained, and it's necessary for the will or the cohesive force. Next, it goes into how would theosophy explain communication from distances? And it would state that an adept can attune all the molecules and all the thinking in his mind to vibrate in unison with the mind to be affected. And we do think there's a typo in the ocean here, and that it would say that brain that's to be communicated with would either voluntarily be thrown into unison or fall into it involuntarily. But it does stay here because it says the same thing twice. So we think that it could be a typo, I don't know, 100-year-old typo. So this would explain how the masters and such can communicate at great distances, and that the inner senses, so that one can understand that the inner senses don't depend on the physical senses, that one doesn't need the ears to hear. One only needs a spiritual understanding of himself, and he may feel and see thoughts and images also, and they could be in the mind of another. And then it goes on to explain that if one were to realize at any moment that they were having an opportunity to invade the thoughts of another, that they should cease and desist immediately. Because it is considered a burglary to enter the mind of another. And if one was a disciple, that power would be taken away. And if one was a regular person, it would be considered a burglary, and its consequences could be felt even if it was 10,000 years later. So there's no relief there. It's a serious consequences. The privacy of every individual. And along with these protections and advice and warning is the ethical substance of the teachings, that one could infuse their own philosophy of life with, because they would have a greater respect and so on. Says here, they would pull off the day when all may have these great powers. So one would want to reserve his nature advancement so that he could share it with everybody. The next phenomenon that we may cover here is the moving of objects. And it's been stated, we believe, our study class that the astral arm can be made to extend from the physical body. And pick up an object and extend also that astral arm, and this can happen to 10 feet. And then the second way that objects could be moved would be when objects were needed to be moved farther than 10 feet. And farther than 10 feet, they would one would need to have the use of the elementals to perform that. And that would be directed by the inner man, and these objects would carry by changing the polarity of everything. So, and thus we see that moving them seemingly unsupported. And that's the end of the part, and it does state at the end that if there were a medium or somebody who wasn't understanding how they're doing moving things or things are moving, because I know they help people to understand why things are moving sometimes if they're contacted by someone who wants, you know, other medium to explain why it's happening around them, mm-hmm. is that they may not know how it's happening. But the ignorance of how it's happening doesn't mean that the proof of it's happening is that the law of the proof is non-existent. That there is, within the philosophy, a way to understand seemingly unexplainable phenomena.
excuse me. On page 139, about 10 lines down, it talks about the will. It's the greatest power. Excuse me. Well, when they talk about the will, the imagination and will,
mm-hmm.
and it says that the modern Western definition of imagination is incomplete and wide of the mark. Is that still hold true, and why is that? Any guesses or?
Well, we wish we had written down what comes up for the definition of imagination, because it does fit in with theosophical knowledge.
Would
but
you
it's
like
not
to get the book?
Well, I only have it on my phone.
Okay.
Yeah. But the way that people understand imagination is that it's something in your mind and that it's not real. But Theosophy's understanding of the imagination is that what is in your mind is real. So regardless of the instances or the causes or the effects or the just, you know, we're not talking anything about karma of imagination. Yet, a clearer understanding of imagination would lead to a more profounder understanding of the dangers and the wonders, you know, the constructive and the destructive uses of the imagination.
Further in that paragraph, it explains that when we really use this faculty, we create a mold. And it means that we, through making an image, can make a reality.
Yes.
And I don't think science thinks that.
No. Without the theosophical understanding about imagination, one wouldn't realize that their image-making faculty is, in fact, a reality-making faculty. Like that image is causing a future reality.
And part of that, it might be helpful to realize that, you know, we often think imagination, well, it's an image, I have to be able to see it. Well, on the one hand, we have to be able to see it in our mind as a clear, concise mental picture, use all of our senses to experience what we're trying to bring about. So we have to smell it, hear it, see it. Even how do we feel when it's in our presence, and that makes it more and more real. And I think that's...
Well, yeah, I mean, what we're talking about, what we're saying now is if we're going to charge our imagination with all kinds of feeling and color and scent and smell, we might want to wonder, what's our motive, what are we doing, why are we doing that, and waking up to where we were rather than playing around there.
We think earlier, top page 140, that if we understood you correctly, you said that perhaps there was a typo.
Yeah.
Well, but if you read it the other way, the one with the power to affect another mind can throw into the same unison with the cooperation of the other,
right.
Or without having it that way, that individual can put themselves voluntarily into that condition. So we don't think it's a typo.
Okay.
Although that was very interesting.
Well, yeah, we were thinking that if they were going to fall into it, they may fall into it involuntarily. That's all we were thinking, because without prior notice, we wouldn't
we
know how to fall into it voluntarily.
We don't think that's possible. We don't think you could be in a communion with a soul with higher powers unless you voluntarily asked for it.
Well, at some point, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, we there is a bit of having to do with the subject and the reference tonight. A bit about what could be the three ways that someone could reflect from that inner aspect. And one was illness and suffering. So I guess voluntarily or involuntarily, you could set up causes. Concede it's not a typo.
Well, we think there's a good chance that it is a typo.
There's tons of typos.
Because one would say you can either do it voluntarily or do it voluntarily.
Yes.
That just makes no sense. It makes no sense. It's like saying either I could go to the store or I could go to the store.
Yes.
We think the point is that either one is thrown into that condition by someone who has the power to do that, or you have developed some power of your own and you can fall into it. In both cases, it has to be voluntary.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
Mm?
Yeah.
With respect to the earlier discussion on imagination, and whether or not it's even worth using the faculties, and maybe it's more important just to focus on what's here and about rather than, well, on the one hand, then why bother developing faculties? If you're not going to use it, you lose it. And aren't we told, and don't we read every week, that what the end in view is of ULT, which is universal brotherhood? So if we see it, know it, live it, act it, all of this, it's not just going to pop in out of thin air. We have to create the universe of brotherhood.
Yeah, so be aware when one is consciously developing the imagination. That's all we can conclude from that.
Yeah, so we discussed before, but everything begins in the mind. Everything is a thought. That's where it all has to begin, with the kind of thoughts that we hold to be true. Because that feeds our imagination and the truth space. You know, that's a thought. So it's a matter of our imagination, how we use it, rather than in particular or sort of universally.
Yeah, that's a good way to get into the reference a little bit, because the reference does talk a little bit about where a lot of the stuff that we think comes from. And a lot of the stuff we think comes from the body. It doesn't come from higher part of our nature. And that the when the stomach wants a feast, it shows the feast to the brain. It's the one that visualizes the feast. And that every part of the body retains its own memory and imagination, if you will. So one needs to kind of find a way to it's actually sort of a disconnection with the flesh, and that the brain is the doorway, it's the only way through it. But that, it happens in the heart. So I guess if we can justify what we're thinking, then, we're with theosophy as an understanding, you could find protection in your justifications because you think you're being good and, what you don't know won't hurt you until it does. But, it's a very interesting part about where your thoughts are coming from and what you think is just a temporary personal part of the mind, universal mind.
Thank you. It's difficult because we can't easily imagine the higher. We can so easily imagine this plane and how I feel and if I'm hungry and the dream I had last night and play with that in our imagination. But it's to no end. It's simply coloring this spiritual power towards the lower and either the part or the reference says we should be working from spirit down to matter, not matter up. So it's a difficult subject, but it says it is the image making faculty. Think about that. If we could not make an image in our mind of something, how would we know how to walk? How would we know how to drive a car? What would a fork be? It's mundane at this point, but the more we practice it in a higher way, what would an adept look like? What would the adept do in this circumstance? Then we have something different to mold that faculty on. Yes.
A very interesting idea that we have difficulty imagining such high concepts. And it leads one to think that we can't imagine anything unless we can form a thought or think about it first. In order to imagine a table, we have to have a thought. Table first.
Right.
So it would seem that it is by studying philosophy and metaphysics and the ideas that we nurture those kinds of thoughts so it becomes easier for us to imagine those high concepts.
Yes, and we think it was Plato who said, thoughts rule the world. The thought has to come first. Well, actually, the desire has to come first, and we won't get into that. It's probably someone else's part. But at the stage that we're talking about, the thoughts are underlying the images. So the point made was if we are filling our thoughts with this type of study, or the life of the Buddha, or how can I be of help to my fellow man? We're on a better track than what we typically find ourselves doing. Yes.
And when it comes to imagination, let's not forget that the root word of the word imagination is the same etymology
calls it the king-making faculty. And yet, without will, where would imagination go? So they're sort of co-spiritual powers, let's say, behind you, yeah.
A very wise old man told a young man once, get over yourself. When we try, something in us comes up and is a foe, an enemy, that will not allow us to do that. So getting over oneself, we have to have some ideas explained to us for us to investigate. And it's our understanding that it's the purpose of our studies, our understanding, and independent devotion means a great deal. But getting over ourselves is where the fight is.
Getting over ourselves. If it does spring up, that resentment and attitude that was described, there's something in it that belongs to us. If somebody said, get over yourself, and you laughed, has nothing to do with you. But if you get really angry and want to retaliate some way or have a word of war of words, there's something in there that's yours that you need to take a look at. And we are constantly told, get over the self, lower S, and strive for each of the states above it, with capital letters and all caps and so forth, of the self, of the spiritual consciousness. And all of this, you know, it was said earlier, we forget the exact contribution, but it was that nothing would come out of it. This study will reap spiritual ideas. It is said they spring up spontaneously in the course of time. So if we are able to separate ourselves from the lower man's reaction, the reaction of the personal man, rather, then we are able to look at something and say, what is this? Why am I upset about this? Why am I wasting time? Oh, there must be something. And we have to go searching, and then we have to correct it. And then the next time someone says it, we may not have the exact same reaction. Yes?
There's a quote that covers that by Mark Twain, and it says, when someone lies on you, it disturbs you, but when they tell the truth, it really hurts. So, but the thing that I wanted to say, as far as like imagination and having something to imagine, that is usually the job of the messenger or the reformer sent to a people. And it's usually it's always someone within their society, because if they brought someone from out of their society, everyone would point at him and say, well, it's easy for him. He doesn't live here. He doesn't know this. So it's usually someone from their society that sets up that example of how they should be, who points out that road that is more uplifting than the present road they're on. But it's someone whom they can identify with, someone that they know is from among themselves.
Yes, and it said in the somewhere in the study that at one time we didn't even need language. Of course, we know this. Everything was symbolic. Every one of the symbols on this sheet for the forum is a spiritual symbol of a particular religion or religious idea. And they are all very, very different, but they signify the same thing. Unity, we are one. We are a brotherhood, as we say. So we completely forget our point with that, but the contribution was right on target. We appreciate it, yes.
A comment before was that someone sparks our imagination or something. Well, it's someone in the impersonal sense as well, because it's really just an idea.
In the what sense?
Impersonal. The Bhagavad Gita is an example of that. You know, the second chapter, it's how do we strive to live that life? You know, and what examples are given, and what methods are given, and to train ourselves to be better able to help and teach others. So oftentimes, the instructions are given us. It's basically self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
And all the little ways of life that no one notices, only you. So, but that's an idea. That's a training, but it's not so much a training on the physical plane, but it's a training on the inner plane.
In the mind, which is where everything takes place. And that harkens back to the other comment about each being given to the group that will understand it best. So, yes, in chapter 2 in the Bhagavad Gita, it's absolutely magnificent. We can't sing the praises enough, but the basic ideas are that we do not die, that we are immortal, the spirit is unprovable, unmanifest, yet eternal. If we think we kill another, we're wrong. We are never made to be killed. It's all these ideas about how connected we are with the cycle of life, and that nothing can really hurt us unless we allow it to. And in this case, it was talking about death, which is very extreme. But even Arjuna, who was despondent, looking at the enemy, being friend and family, had to wrestle with these ideas. They're the ideas we wrestle with every single day. They're just clothed in different ideas. Yes.
It's interesting what was just said is harkens back to that idea of falling into or being thrown into. Repeated, nothing can hurt us unless we allow it to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an example of voluntarily falling into hurt.
Uh-huh.
So, as opposed to being actively hurt. So we were wondering, how do we fall into hurt? What do we do that we voluntarily allow ourselves to be vulnerable to be hurt?
How do we voluntarily fall into the condition where we feel that hurt? We think it depends on what we are concentrating upon or what we hold dear on the personal plane. It's a situation where we believe we will have to give something up and the other won't. So we are attached to whatever the situation is and unwilling to be self-sacrificing. Other ideas on that? Yes.
Well, certainly we voluntarily, so to speak, would subject ourselves to pain or hurt if we allow unhealthy relationships to flourish in our life.
Unhealthy relationships, absolutely. Yes.
The Buddha's idea was that all suffering, desire is at the root of all suffering. So it's that which we desire that causes us to be pained or hurt. Our desire to hold on to something, to make something our own, something to grasp, or have some control over something that we don't have true control over, except
desire then is at the root of everything, and we are unwilling to give it up. Did you want to follow up?
Well, the whole idea of imagination connects with this. We talked about how useful imagination, but the misuse of imagination, the voluntary building up of very negative ideas in our mind, not only allows us to be hurt, we feel wounded when there's no wounding intended, but it attracts to us all sorts of influences that we wouldn't ordinarily feel.
And we certainly don't need more of those. So we have to be careful what we are thinking and feeling and attracting to ourselves. Whatever it is, the part says it's karmic, and no matter how long it takes, you're going to have to deal with it. And that is a daunting thought. Your hand was up next.
Well, I forget, one of the little books told the pupil, meditate and fight. So
meditate and fight.
Meditate and fight. So that means that the moment we begin to follow these ideas independently, of course, and we discover, yes, there is a fight, because we have challenged something that was in charge of us, the lower self. So the study of the principles, which are part of this, are very valuable in our understanding what principle is active at any particular time.
Yes.
When we get mad, we know that that's karmic, karma. What's karma? Passions and desires. Well, self-control comes into play there. And that's when the battle begins. Meditate and fight.
No one said this would be easy. We know it's not. We know it from our everyday lives. But the meditation seeks to, and it's not a big thing. It's a departure from the world of sense for a period of time. It's a concentration on things of the higher, the spiritual, and it tends to solidify and make one all of the things we are struggling with. So any time we seek to change something in our lower nature, you're going to have a battle. A very mundane example. How many people have tried to quit smoking or eventually were successful? Why were you successful eventually? You know, personal stories, and use those as examples of the very personal man, how he can attack things that are perhaps a little more difficult. Did you have your hand up?
Well, what we're thinking is that everything is all a part of our whole body. It's all ours. Like, if we're programmed in this life to come in and get goodness from the depths of depravity.
Get goodness from
the
depths,
right,
of depravity?
Hello. That's what we're really talking,
okay,
about here. I mean, the part talks about how matter has been through every form there is.
Right.
And that your matter is your body, your whole body. And that the lower manas gets to contact that in its mental, limited, temporary, personal
two different things.
What you're thinking, like judging yourself, thinking you are yourself.
Right.
It goes that deep. I mean, just thinking you are yourself is so selfish, if you would, because it's a temporary, illuminated highway to space. And whatever you want to say about that. So that's why we think that knowing the knowledge of the imagination helps everyone deal with what they bring to their own observation and awareness. Because no one else is responsible.
But you said two opposite things. You said we should stay right where we are with the imagination, and we should use it to start to make
to
changes.
To deal with ourselves.
Of course, we can never, do the work for another.
When you're there, is the only real, perhaps. I mean, with the knowledge that you know you need to be the better able to help and teach others. I mean, we all, you know, we just don't see any difference between some goody two shoes and a murderer. Just don't. We think that they're both valid and pure.
We cannot judge,
you know,
anyone.
Yeah.
We
no
can't.
No matter what they're thinking all the time, it doesn't make a difference because they're not me.
Exactly. And you're not them, and you don't have their karma, and they don't have your karma.
Bring it on. You know?
All you can do is love them anyway.
Yeah.
Compassion being the highest faculty that the masters have taught us. Yes, it might be someone who committed a murder. We know not the circumstances, but we can send loving thoughts that that soul will begin his or her journey to coming out of and understanding what they did. We can't do more than that for them. We each have to work on our own plane, on our own circumstances. Absolutely. Way in the back.
One thing we think we have to add to that is that we have to use our imagination to realize that we are spiritual beings. And the acknowledgement of this personal nature we have, we fashion using our own power of mind and motive and will and imagination. So we are two things. We're responsible for the personal nature we're trying to work through, but we have to spend some of our time realizing we are divine and we are responsible. You talked about meditation before. A female warden of a prison in India started a program with the prisoners that they did not like very much, teaching them meditation. And there's a book about it. All of the statistics in that prison have altered radically. There's cooperation and growth and people caring and helping each other. So we have the potential, we just don't imagine we do.
Absolutely. Mr. Judge said 500 of us working in that spiritual direction can help to change the world. That few of all the souls that are here right now. It's amazing to me. Yes.
At the bottom of page 139, there's a statement, to communicate with another mind at any distance, the adept attunes all the molecules of the brain and all the thoughts of the mind, so as to vibrate in unison. Now we read and we've heard in our declaration that the basis for union here is a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. So we wonder, as we share that similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching,
absolutely, time being no factor, having no, it doesn't, you don't have to sit at the same hour if it's not possible. But if you are taking the time, a group of 15 or 20 souls sitting and delving into these ideas, trying our best to understand them, that process going on in all the other lodges, absolutely. You strike a match, you've got a little tiny flame. You throw the match into the wood, you're going to have a bonfire. And that's what this is. We are adding to and enlightening each other more so, and perhaps more easily, or perhaps in a different way than if we took the books home and studied them privately, which can be done, but you miss out on that opportunity that was beautifully described. Yeah. Yes.
The comment was that this statement of unity, similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching is an idea which we promote. But it's also the basis for a nucleus of universal brotherhood. Mm-hmm. There's a common thread that we all share, that unity. So that is not universal brotherhood. It's the nucleus or the beginning of, you know, of that understanding of the universal brotherhood.
The beginning of the understanding of that universal brotherhood. It is a unity, a unified force, which we think is what Mr. Judge was talking about with the 500 people working in that direction. I can't think of the right word, but it's got more power because more people are sending it in the same direction, perhaps.
I can't document it, but I think it's in the book. Someone is challenged and asked about their adepts and why don't they take a greater influence in the affairs of men, and said, well, they do often behind the scenes.
Chapter one. Not tonight, yeah. But you can ask.
The question that I wanted to ask in reference to that is, like, one of the examples that I've heard given is, like, with Hitler committing the same mistake that Napoleon did, sending his troops into Russia in the winter, or something to that effect. And was that the influence of the mind, of a superior mind working on his mind to influence him to make such a decision?
We can only imagine so, but we think that makes sense because the error was repeated and the outcome was failure. So we can't say for sure, but we would say that it makes sense, yes.
Well, we can say for sure that no adept and no master would go against the will of anyone. So if there was an influence like that, it had to be because that individual was already susceptible to the idea.
Mm-hmm. Already susceptible to the idea. Yes.
We found a topic several weeks ago that stayed with us. The words gratitude and humility stood out. And to take those words apart and understand, it's the gratitude is for pointing out the way, and humility brings together as a unit.
Bless you. Gratitude is pointing out the way, and humility is for pointing, what was it?
Be humble. In other words, humility.
Right, to be humble, to show others the same path?
The subduction of that idea, the personality, is more important.
Absolutely. And we're told a master, we would never know that there was an adept or a chela or any number of exalted beings standing next to us because they choose to stand in the shadow so that others may shine in the light. Yes.
Well, but we can again use our imagination. If there is someone that we look up to because of their compassion or their generosity or their innate wisdom, we can imagine ourselves being more like them and set that up in our nature.
Yes. We have time for one more. Was your hand up, sir? No? Yes, it was.
Just a reflection back on that. It says that the person had to have that in his nature already, had to be leaning into it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would make him voluntarily. As it says here, either voluntarily thrown into same unison or fall into it voluntarily. But if his mind is already made up to be react that way, then he is voluntarily falling into that pattern of thought.
And so the reason why we must always be on guard of what our thoughts are, it speaks in the part about the only protection against evil or that which would hurt us is right discrimination, that we think in the right way, the Buddha's list, we act in the right way, etc., etc. We just, before we close, we wanted to read, and it's a little bit long, we apologize, the very end of the reference. Thank you. And it's in a pamphlet called Psychic and Noetic Action. This is how the Madge of the 19th century corroborates the foregoing when speaking of the astral light, which we didn't speak of a lot tonight, but we have said that to acquire magical power, two things are necessary: to disengage the will from all servitude and to exercise it in control. All the magical operations consist in freeing oneself from the coils of the ancient serpent, then to place the foot on its head and lead it according to the operator's will. I will give unto thee, says the serpent in the gospel myth, all the kingdoms of the earth, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. The initiated should reply to him, I will not fall down. As such, the personal ego, becoming at one with its divine parent, shares in the immortality of the latter. Blessed is he who has acquainted himself with the dual powers at work in the astral light. Thrice blessed he who has learned to discern the noetic from the psychic action of the, quote, double-faced God in him, and who knows the potency of his own spirit or soul dynamics. Class adjourned. Too far away.
Good classmates.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Look for a little.
This is ours. Yeah, right.
Thank you, D.
Thank you. That was a tough one, wasn't it?
Oh, God. I just wanted to say something. I'd like
Michael, don't be fresh.
Dr. D, Miller.
Well, this was an informative class.
Thank you, sweetie.
Yeah.
We try.
Nice meeting you.
Did you cut off your phone? What happened? I thought you were growing up.
No, it's still there.
It's all curled up, that's what it is.
And so what's the goal of the religion? What's the religion?
It's the Donald.
And then about, when you look at that, do you project?
Friday, yeah.
After that.
Well, in line. Yeah, what's, there's.
I want to see both faces. I want to see the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Oh, nice. Oh, that is really nice.
We're on the same page.
Yeah, good.
That's the.
Yes.
I turned it off, but I didn't turn it off.
No, all you need to do is that. Push all the way.